calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust.
Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly and Mike O'Connor. In this episode, we will be discussing the 2-1 loss for Fulham against Blackburn yesterday. It's an unfortunate loss. We will be going through it. We will share our thoughts on the match, our thoughts on the starting 11, and also the key moments of the match. Unfortunately, we will not be rating the players, the Fulham manager, Blackburn, or the ref, as we could not watch it in advance of this show. I've been going back and forth what we should do, but you know what? I wanted to do a show. We were not able to do a post-match show last week at the Sunderland match. I wanted to do it here. We still have plenty to discuss and go through, so we're still going to do a show, and I think it's going to be fine. We just won't be rating the players and rating Blackburn kit, and we also won't be obviously rating the ref as well. But you know what? We still have plenty to go through. Looks like Mike is on. I'm going to bring him on as well. First, I'll go to you, Mike. How are you doing?
Not too bad, Russ. How are you? A very exciting morning for your family.
It's very exciting. You know what? This is going to be 90 minutes of just a pure diversion for me because I'm about as nervous as I could be. The best way to describe it, Mike, and I've tried to tell people this, think of it as the Europa League final in Hamburg for Fulham. That's what this is for me. And plus, I don't know if the Patriots will get back there again in my lifetime. I'm just being honest here. Tom Brady's 37 years old. So I'm going to enjoy this. So in that way, it is a little similar to the Europa League final where Fulham supporters didn't know, don't know if that will ever happen again. I'm kind of in the same situation, I think, today. So I'm going to enjoy it, but I'm glad that we have these 90 minutes for me to forget about all that stuff and just concentrate on Fulham. And we will. We will, my friend. I'm going to bring David on the line. David, how are you doing, my friend?
Hi, yeah, well, you know what? You've talked about it so much that I might even have to tune in to Deflategate Episode 2 later to see what it's all about because I've got my curiosity up. But surely is this not the Champions League final rather than Europa League final in terms of things? This is the big one, isn't it, for you guys? And
it is.
But you're right.
It is.
You're right what you say, though, because I really fear, especially the way we are at the moment, if I'll ever get to see us in another European final in my lifetime anyway, because it's a bit it's been a bit depressing how things have been going in the last couple of seasons or so. And obviously yesterday was a very disappointing result for us, because I know there was a lot of optimism in the prediction on Friday that we can get a result there. But you know, Mr. Negative here, old David, I thought, well, you know, we might scrape a 2-2 draw. And I think from what I saw, you know, perhaps we should have scraped a 2-2 draw, but I knew Blackburn were going to be good for a couple of goals. They had a danger man of Rhodes up front, and that proved to be the case. So obviously based on what we did see, we can discuss that. And hi again, Mike, by the way.
Hey, how's it going, David? How you doing?
Cheers. Good to be on with you again. Yeah.
Yeah, listen, I look forward to talking both with you about this match. Again, you know, listen, we watched it. Probably all three of us have seen the highlights. But again, it's unfortunate, you know, and I don't blame the club. They only get what they can get from, you know, again, when it's a visiting situation like this is, I think it's a little bit different when it's a home match. They will have that replay up, and I will watch it. But unfortunately, at the time that we're broadcasting this, you know, we didn't get a chance to watch it. But that's okay, because, again, we all listened to it. And like we all mentioned, we all saw the highlights. So there's certainly things to get out of it. And, David, I'm going to start with you. Just share with me your opening thoughts on what you listened to, the highlights, and the your overall thoughts on this 2-1 loss for Fulham.
Well, as I said, it was disappointing, obviously, but for me it wasn't a big surprise. I thought it was going to be tough for us to get a result. That's why I predicted a draw. And I think, you know, from the highlights we saw, I think we could have got a draw. We missed a few good chances really there. We got into some good positions. But by the sounds of what I heard, our overall play wasn't, you know, it wasn't good enough again. You know, we still kind of lack some of the basics. Our defending wasn't good enough. Obviously, we've let two goals in. The first goal looked a bit of a joke. It seemed to come from a Staffelidis throw-in that didn't work very well, and it left Bodder off short, and the guy just walked in and scored.
Yeah.
Second one as well, likewise, is a header that, you know, he got in front of Hutchinson, and perhaps Bettinelli would have liked to have done better. I know he's done really well for us, but he kind of got to it. He kind of went under him, squirmed under him. And then there was a few chances we've had with Woodrow especially and McCormack where we could have done better. But I think the main talking points are obviously the starting lineup, which we'll talk about in depth in a minute. But, you know, the move of, for me, it was the move of McCormack back into the cam position, which is, I find, very questionable, because he'd been playing there and everyone's been saying, let's put him up front and see what he can do. We put him up front, he gets a hat trick. And then, you know, and I even had this article that McCormack said himself where he wanted to be playing up front. And then he's back in the cam position when there are other people who could play there. And for me, that was a strange move. The one, the bringing in Richards is less of a strange move because, for me, I feel that, you know, Grimmer has played a lot. He's a young player. It's going to be difficult, you know. You don't want to burn him out. And perhaps, and just perhaps, and I know Yanis is probably listening, and Yanis, I totally agree with the premise of the, you know, we should keep our own, give our own players priority over loan players. However, if Richards is cup-tied or Swansea don't want him cup-tied and he can't play Tuesday, therefore this was the only opportunity to give Grimmer a break if Grimmer's feeling a bit fatigued. So I do understand that to a point. It was a move of McCormack that really baffled me again. So, you know, and with Kakalicic looking great in there, as we know, how we started against Norwich with McCormack up front, Forest, with McCormack up front and Kaka in that camera, I thought that was great. And so why he's changed it again, I'm not really sure. So, you know, that's my overall kind of analysis of the whole game, really.
Sure. Not a problem there, David. And like you mentioned, our friend Yanis will be listening. He's already let me know that he'll be listening. And you know what? I'll be sharing some thoughts that he shared with me when we do talk about starting 11, specifically about Jazz Richards. All I will tell you is that Yanis is not happy at all. In fact, very upset about the whole situation. But we'll talk about that when we get to the starting 11. Mike, just want to get your thoughts on the match, Jesse, just overall.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. We've got, let's see, I saw the two-minute highlights, and I listened to Gentleman Jim. Am I breaking up? I'm hearing some static.
No, you're sounding fine, Mike.
All right, awesome. So, yeah, I watched the two-minute highlights, and I listened to the whole match through Gentleman Jim. And overall, you know, I really don't think we deserved to lose this match. I really don't think that Blackburn were really that much better. But that being said, they are a very decent side. Rhodes has always been someone that I've been admired, and I think that he's a very quality player that they have, and he proved it again yesterday. And I am questioning Kitt's decisions yesterday, though, with just what David said, with McCormack in the cam role. He's proven that he's a goal scorer. He even scored from that position yesterday, and I just don't see why we're not using him up front. And Jazz Richards, I think overall, I think he put a good name in for himself. He put in a good shift. And I think he is actually, from what I heard, a better option than Grimmer at the moment with his experience and a bit more maturity in his legs. But overall, I'm pretty disappointed with the result, but there's nothing we can do about it now. So we just move on to next week.
Okay, fantastic. And you know what? You know, I'm glad that you guys brought up McCormack because we're certainly going to be talking about that as we go through this because David brings up a valid point. You bring it up as well, and I believe Yanis is pretty upset about that as well. He keeps messaging me. You might be hearing the pings in the background because he's, you know, again, he's upset about how this all turned out as were probably all of us. You know, again, my thoughts on this, and David, you already talked about it. You saw it as tough sledding, a 2-2 draw. Listen, I haven't watched it, but based on what I listened to and the highlights, I saw a highlight package that was a little bit longer, 4 minutes, believe it or not, from Blackburn directly, and then also the highlights given by the club. But listening to it, I just felt that this was a match, not just to get a point, but to get all 3 points. I think that's what frustrates me because it is a young side. It's like we're taking one step forward, then one step back. One step forward, one step back. That's the frustrating part of this. That match was there not just to get the point, but to get all 3 points, honestly. Based on what I listened to, I might have a different view when I watch it, but based on what I listened to and everything that I've heard about it, that match was there for the taking, even though we might not have been at our best. They certainly weren't at their best. And, you know, again, when we go through stat attack, some of that is going to show itself out as well. But, you know, it's frustrating because it's almost like we are treading water, former treading water. They're taking steps and then they're being knocked back, and it's a little frustrating. But there's still some good signs because, again, I think under McGath, this match would be a 3-0 loss. And I thought at times listening to it that we had some control in the match, you know, away. And I think that's a positive sign moving forward. We need to be going into matches away thinking that we can actually win it. And I think that was the approach, but it just didn't come off. And the frustrating part of it was Fulham started pretty strong, but again, in the end, you know, it's still a loss, guys. All right, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Let's get into this talk about the starting 11 because there's been much talk about it on social media about it, so I want to get your thoughts on it. You've already talked a little bit about it, but I want to give you more of a chance to talk about the starting 11.
Okay, yeah, let's see here. The starting 11, Jazz Richards, I mean, Bettinelli is the goalkeeper. He's the only one that we have right now that's even worth a mention of starting. So obviously, if I saw any other name than Bettinelli's, I probably would have been dumbfounded. And then looking at the back four, it looks like Kit started with his Hutchinson-Bajra pairing in the center, which is fine. They're probably our best two center backs that we have as a combination, as a duo. Stafelidis over on the left-hand side, I still think he deserves his position. I think we have to remember this guy's 20 years old, even though he doesn't look like it. So he's still learning, and I think he's very good for his age and applying his trade. And Jazz Richards is someone that I was very, very excited to see in this role, and I was very happy that Kit gave him this opportunity because I love Grimmer. I do. And he's one of our academy players, but he's been playing a lot of games, and he's been turned too easily at times in the past few matches. So I thought Jazz Richards was a great pick because it gives him a chance to show what he's made of. And basically, if we want to extend his loan past that one-month period into an end-of-season loan. So if he shows that he's good enough, then, yeah, maybe we'll keep him on and be willing to pay his wages for the rest of the season rather than just keep him for that 1 month and ship him off. Other than that, I like Tunnicliffe and Parker. I think Tunnicliffe is providing us a lot of needed cool-headedness along with Parker, but he also seems to have the younger legs. Parker being our captain, you can't go without him. Christensen looks lively, still a little bit rusty from when he got injured and is still coming back, but very, very happy to see LVC back. And then my biggest concern would be that I think Kaka Nikolic should have played, and I think that you could have had a pairing of maybe Woodrow McCormick up front or Rodiega McCormick with maybe Kaka Nikolic fitting somewhere in the cam role or switching with Tunnicliffe. So I don't know if playing Rodiega and Woodrow and McCormick all at one time was necessarily the right option for me.
Very interesting take. I like that take because when I saw the starting 11, that's what was going through my mind was, where's Kaka Nikolic? Doesn't he fit in there somewhere? Why is he playing McCormack, Rodiega, and Woodrow all together? That's a very good point, Mike. David, what are your thoughts on the starting 11? I also want to get your thoughts of what Mike just mentioned.
Well, you heard my kind of take already. I mean, and obviously I said on Friday night what I thought would be the starting 11, and the differences in it were obviously Richards at right back and McCormack instead of Kakanich's role, or effectively Woodrow instead of Kakanich, as it turned out to be. Obviously, the back five in the main picks itself, you know, as Mike said, there was no other choice but from Bettinelli. I mean, listen, if it had been anyone but Bettinelli in goal, if it had been Old Pajamas making an appearance, my protests for Kit out would have made Yanis's look like, you know, a little squeak from a mouse, because, you know, that would be a disgraceful decision, obviously. Bettinelli at the moment is the only viable option in goal. I think Bodaroff and Hutchison have done well in the main and deserve to keep the place. Stafelidis is the only real option again at left back at the moment. Kavanagh hasn't been strong enough there. Amabieta isn't fit. You're not going to dabble with playing Voza or Zverevic or someone else like that, just, you know, unless you're really, really stuck. So, yeah, no, Stafelidis. It's just the right-back issue. And as I said before, I do agree with the premise about what Yanis has been saying, you know, having someone who's only here for a month taking the place of a regular. But then, you know, we end up going back to Brian Ruiz and saying, oh, well, we all knew he was going in January. What was the point of playing him anyway? And you know, and that's a valid point as well, because we'd all like to have seen Chris David given a chance in that position, and maybe had he had a chance in that position rather than Ruiz, maybe he would have made that position his own. So, yes, it's a very valid argument, and, you know, something we will discuss, I guess, more tomorrow when we have time.
Right.
But as I said before, Grimmer has played a few games, and you know, I haven't been his biggest fan, but I think he has been getting better. I have to say that because Mike Gregg's probably listening, but no, in all seriousness, I mean, I think he has got better, but, you know, he's a young player, we don't want him burnt out, and if this was just a point of giving him a rest ahead of Tuesday, albeit fine, I mean, if Richards is here with a view to keep him longer, even making him a permanent signing, well, then it's a different matter, but for me, Grimmer is probably only really keeping the seat warm for Hoogland anyway. I would have expected Hoogland to be coming back when he's fit. So, you know, in this respect, perhaps to give, you know, the month that Richards is here to give Grimmer a bit of a break at times until Hoogland's back, I can understand it. I don't like messing around with the defence, but, you know, if he is a viable option, then so be it. Midfield-wise, yeah, we thought it would be Tunnicliffe that would play instead of Fofana. We knew Park would probably come back in. And it's a shame for Fofana because he has looked dangerous at times, but I thought Tunnicliffe was probably a better option because not only the way he played at Sunderland, he deserved to keep his place, but because of his knowledge of Blackburn. Obviously, of course, is a given as well. You know, I think there is an option, perhaps, from what I saw at Sunderland, you know, for Parker to have that break and they can use the other three players in that position, Tunnicliffe to play the holding role with Fofana there. We do have that option at least now. But in the main, Parker should be the first choice in there still at this time as a captain, as Mike said. But the big one, you know, the cam position. You know, I've said it already on the show, and I'm going to say it again. What on earth was he doing? You know, he's been messed around with McCormack, put him on the last man, on the shoulder of the last defender, see what he can do. He scores a hat-trick. And then what do you do? Well, you rest him against Sunderland, and then you put him in as cam. Yanis, I know you're listening. I'm starting to agree with you. I don't want to be calling for managers' heads, but it does really question about what Kit's doing here because it, you know, it begs serious questions about his acumen. Kit, I mean, he's got to stay to the end of the season. He's got to have that chance to do this. But this and some of the substitutions, my God, what's going on? Kaká's just come back. We've pulled him back from loan. I thought, you know, especially against Forest at home, he was very, very good in that cam position. I'm not sure, you know, I've listened to other people on Twitter, whether he is the answer at the cam long term. I think, you know, ideally I'd rather have a specialist in that position, someone there who perhaps plays that role. Now, I suppose there's even a case, and I don't know how silly this sounds, even a case of putting LVC there if you've got all these other midfielders.
Right.
Because he makes such great forward runs and he leads up play. I don't know whether that would be a waste of, you know, his more defensive side, LVC, but, you know, we don't have a lot of other option there. But for me, McCormack is not the option. That was a very bad move by Kit. And the trouble is up front, we then have two forwards who have both have a wasteful side, really. Neither of them are very good at converting chances. They do score, but not enough. And we saw yesterday with Cawley, a couple of misses again, crucial misses, really. Hugo's been like that all season. He has scored goals, but he's missed good chances as well. You know, I think when you look at it, it's a bit late now to be worrying about it for the transfer window, but perhaps if that was a position to upgrade, that's the position where we are most lacking. And if you could have put someone alongside McCormack who's like a, you know, an out-and-out goal scorer and a serious upgrade, even, you know, Jordan Rhodes that we've been talking about, someone who was a clinical goal scorer, then maybe that is the position we're lacking in because we've got people who can play the position there and they play quite well, but they're too wasteful and we can't afford to be wasteful, especially on the games where we haven't been creating many chances, which has been a lot this season. So I think that was a bad move by Kit to take McCormack away from the firing line, to deprive Kakanicic a chance, and to play with two strikers who, you know, both are okay in their own right, but neither of them have been particularly prolific in terms of their, you know, goals to chances ratio.
Right. You know, and listen, David, I think you analyzed this really well, and the fact that you and Yanis agree is actually kind of startling but fantastic that you guys actually agree. And the one thing that I want to mention on this whole thing about the starting 11 because I go back to Kaka. You know, just like you were saying, it's funny. I'll just share this really quick little message that Giannis sent me. He goes, why didn't Kaka start? That decision was total Kaka. I just thought that was funny. I just wanted to share that because I agree with Giannis and you guys on this, because he might not be the ultimate player to play that position, but I think right now I think he can do the job. David, you nailed it up front. The problem that I think Kidd is having right now, and again, not to go too much about the game I'm going to be watching tonight, but at least my team, the New England Patriots, I know that the coaching staff puts their players in the right position to succeed, the best possible position to succeed. You just said it. Ross McCormack's best role is probably up front. Put him there. That will put him in the best possible position to succeed. You just mentioned Colley Woodrow and Hugo Rodiega playing together. Maybe they shouldn't be because, again, too many players that are not consistent enough as your strikers. So maybe one of them plays instead of both of them. Again, it's okay for us to look at Kidd and say what you are doing, because that's what we're going to do. We're fans. And in this case, I agree with you guys, because the starting 11, when you really analyze it now and you look at it, I have issues with it. I really do. I have issues with the plan that he set out from the get-go to put the players in the position to succeed. I don't know if he did it in this match. You know, and that's not even me talking about the situation with Jazz Richards. We'll talk about the loan situations with Fofana and Richards tomorrow, because we are going to discuss that. I don't really want to get into that now. I know Giannis is very upset about this, and I see where he's going on this. And, David, going back to the whole Grimmer thing, you know, you mentioned something that really made sense to me. Those five players have been playing well together, including Bettinelli in there. Why are you going to mix it up? This match, for me, matters more than the Sunderland match. Would you agree with that, David? Is this more important? Yeah. Is the Blackburn match more important than the Sunderland match?
Well, I think you have to. The league has to be a priority.
The league has to come first, right?
It has to. I mean, the cup is great, and you know, and a cup run can do wonders. And you know, I think sometimes the two can go hand in hand. If you can get a good cup run together, it does spill over into the league and helps build confidence. But it can also be a distraction as well. And you know, we saw even under the sainted Roy, remember, we saw some great runs in Europe, and he messed around with lineups in the league because of it.
Right.
And I still remember, you know, your favourite place and mine, the losing 2-1 away at Hull when we were absolutely atrocious.
I remember that.
Not as bad as when we lost 6-0 there, but because he messed around with a lineup ahead of a Europa League match. And
David, I remember that match like it was yesterday. I know which match you're talking about, and that kind of goes to what we're talking about again. I have nothing against Jazz Richards. He might turn out to be a really good player. Maybe there's a bigger plan for him. I don't know. But I look at a player like Jack Grimmer, if he's fit to play, should be playing, because it's about consistency. It's about giving young players a chance to grow. I think our friend Mike Gregg would agree with me here. He saw a player like Richards as cover more than playing regularly. And this goes back to this argument that you and I will be talking about tomorrow. Because I see a young player with an opportunity to grow. Why do you want to even remotely stunt that growth by not playing him in this match? Keep the growth going, unless he's injured, unless you feel that he's too tired. Then I can understand if Kit went in that direction. But if this is about playing Richards over Grimmer just because he's come here on loan, I disagree with that. I'm sorry. You play the young player. That's just my opinion on that.
Can I step in for a second with that?
Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. You know, it's funny listening to you guys say this because, you know, I've been thinking it internally to myself for quite some time, because you can see it with Fofana. I don't know what it is, what Kit's thinking when he brings these players in on loan, if he's just so novice to the idea of being a top manager, being an actual coach rather than an under-21s or under-18s coach-manager. He's getting these players in on loan, and they're instantly being put into the lineup, and then he doesn't drop them. So, because if you look at Fofana, in my personal opinion, he's done nothing to warrant a starting place week in and week out, that like he's been doing. And I'm just wondering if he's going to do the same thing with Richards, because even though I think Richards had a decent game yesterday, just because he's a lone player and Swansea want you to play him, doesn't mean you have to at the expense of our own academy players, our own players that are ours on contract, and then having them sit on the bench and just get rusty and waste away. So I'm really kind of baffled by his decision to take these lone players and just, without question, insert them into our lineup. So I completely agree with what you guys are saying.
Yeah, listen, Mike, just to go on that, you know, again, David and I are going to talk about this more tomorrow because I really want to get into this argument. I understand why you bring lone players in. I get it. I can see the advantage for it. I can see the advantage of setting players out alone. I get all that. But I also know that there are certain situations where having lone players are beneficial, and maybe this is one where our situation is, guys, let's be honest, it's going to be really difficult for Fulham to get all the way up to six. Let's be honest here. So shouldn't we be thinking more about building the future? And if that's the case, do lone players help you build for the future in place of younger players that might be part of your future? That's the rub that I have in all of this. I look at a player that Fulham set out on loan a couple of years ago. David, I don't know if you're going to agree with me on this. I was upset when Fulham sent out Kareem Fry to Cardiff. Kareem Fry barely got a sniff. But now looking back at it, that was a team that was in first. That was a team that was going to get promoted. They did not have room to play him because they had other players, their own players, that they put in front. I get it now, partially because of our situation. There's a time and a place where I think lone players make perfect sense. They can help you. You know, they could possibly help you get promoted. But in this situation, when we are really starting over, I just don't know if the value is worth it at this point in place of younger players that have a long-term future with Fulham. But, David, you and I will definitely get into that more tomorrow. I know you have your views on that. But, you know, again, it's coming up because we are talking about the starting 11. But getting back to the whole thing, for me, the bigger issue is what you said, David. It really is about that cam roll. I agree with you 100%. Because, again, Ross McCormack should be playing up front. And Kaká right now I think is a great option in there. So that's the part of this, playing two strikers that both are not hitting on all cylinders together. I don't know if that was the right move, David. Do you agree with me on that those two guys shouldn't have been playing together?
Well, let's say we had two strikers who really did hit it. You know, let's say we had two Jordan Rhodes in the team or something, two guys who were both going to bang 20 in a year. Let's go back to, you know, John Chigana again. Once again, let's hop back to John Chigana. You know, let's talk about the Brian Ruiz show. It could be the John Chigana show, really. I mean, let's go back to that season. We had Hales, we had Balmorty, we had Sahar, who were all scoring for fun. Now, if it was then, you could say, well, yeah, one of them's going to have to play as Cam if you want them in the team or something, because we just can't fit them all in. So if we had two guys who were really hitting the target, then you could say, well, maybe, okay, these two guys are so dangerous that they both have to play. Drop McCormack into the cam role, where it's maybe not his best position, but he's going to support them and assist them. But
right.
When McCormack is maybe your best striker, or probably is your best striker, he's got to be one of the two up front, most certainly, absolutely certainly. Don't play two guys who, you know, are both, you know, okay in their own right, but, you know, not the finished article. So, you know, their missing of chances is a frustration, isn't it? Most certainly, and I think
it is.
You know, Corley has his good points, Corley. So does Hugo, but they both have their bad side as well. So, I don't, you know, you don't want too many of those guys in the team, I think. So no, definitely not. That was a big boo boo by Kit.
Right, and that's why, I'm glad that we can break down. The starting of and really look at it, really analyze it, because again, on paper it looks like, wow, it's this attacking side, but if you look back, David, and you really look back at the layers and you say, okay, well, wait a minute here, you're going to be putting McCormack back in a position where we know he can play, but is this the best position for him? And your two strikers up front are both really not in I guess you could say very high quality form. They're hit or miss. They're just too inconsistent at this point. So what are you doing? So again, that's why I'm glad that we could really break down the starting 11, because I think, you know, again, it's David, we have said this several times. You can actually lose a match before it even began. We've said that often with Felix Bingo, right? This isn't Felix Bingo, but there's also reason to criticize what he did against against Blackburn, setting the team up. Did he put them in the right positions to succeed? I don't know. I don't think he did. I think this one was a mistake. I think Fulham might have lost this match before it even began. I know that sounds extreme, but when you're looking at the starting 11, was this the best starting 11 for this opponent? And I'm not sure it was. That's just my opinion. I'm not sure it was. I'm disappointed by this because this was an opportunity, and they let this opportunity, fall away, and that's just too bad. And I guess we're going to have that as a brand new side, because that's what Fulham is. We are rebuilding. But it was just, I could feel it. I could hear it, and even watching these highlights, I could see it. It was there. It was there for the taking. It just, the execution just wasn't quite there. And that's the difference between winning and losing, having your players in the right position and executing when you have opportunities. And I think both were not there against Blackburn, and it's too bad. And I'm actually a little bit upset by it. Anyways, sorry, guys. I went on my own little Giannis rant there. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the key moments of the match. Okay, and David, I'm going to start with you. Let's start with, again, Fulham started very strong. I think you'll agree with us listening to the match. It sounded like they were pretty much on the front foot, and they had the first real opportunity of the match. You could see this in the highlight package. It was a Jazz Richards opportunity to score. Nice shot on target. Talk about this opportunity, David.
Well, it was a well-worked move, wasn't it? And he was finding a lot of space there in the penalty area. And if it was a strike, he was saying he's got to score. As a defender, well, you can give him a little bit more grace, I suppose. But still, nevertheless, he was in a great position. The keeper did have to save it. Perhaps he didn't quite hit it as well as he would have liked. He looked like he kind of maybe scuffed it a little bit. He got closed down at the last minute. But I think you've got to give credit to the team, the way they kind of, worked the ball around at that point. And that was, we just talked about it, and that was McCormack, of course, playing in that kind of cam role, who actually played the ball through, wasn't it? So, it's ironic, obviously, that, we know he can do it, McCormack. It doesn't. I think he just needs to be doing it further forward.
Right, exactly.
When you look at the
good
map,
point.
When you look at the map on the stat map, McCormack, Rudrow, and Rodiega literally all had the same position anyway. It was a bit like at Sunderland, where both Ruiz and Kakalicic played in the same position when Kaka came on. It was a bit weird, but great ball by McCormack. Good to see your fullbacks. That's what you need in a team like ours. And you can see from the average positions how narrow we were. You need the width from the fullbacks, and he got there. And a couple of times, obviously, in the match, he got there. We saw from the highlights. Bit unlucky, but you can't really ask too much more from that.
No, listen, this was a quality opportunity, and you know what? I have nothing against Jazz Richards because, again, based on what I listened to and this opportunity that I saw, he actually put in a decent shift here. So kudos to Mr. Richards for doing his job. He did his job. This isn't about him. And this is a really good opportunity for him. So again, I don't know how much more he could do. Again, all you can do is get a shot and target. That's exactly what he did, and it was a good, a good ball from McCormack, like you mentioned, David. So, again, this is a good opportunity. Fulham started strong, and listening to the match, I didn't feel, again, this is the first 10 minutes, I really thought that Fulham were going to get ahead early in this match. That's how it felt to me. That's why, Mike, I'm going to go to you, because I was very disappointed in the 12th minute. Very early on, I really thought Fulham should be up a goal, okay? They give up a goal in the 12th minute, a goal I feel they shouldn't have given up by Ben Marshall, and you can actually see the highlights of this. Talk about Fulham going down 1-0 here.
Yeah, it was one of those things that really actually caught me off guard, because when you're just listening to it, and you listen, of course, it's just Gentleman Jim, it's the way that he commentates, it sounded like absolutely nothing was going on. It was just a throw-in, a typical throw in our half, near our goal line. Okay, we can defend this pretty easily. And then when you look at the replay and you look at the highlights, how we allowed this guy to get the ball and score. I mean, he's almost in the exact same position as Jazz Richards was when he missed, but farther away. And it's shocking. It's just, it's purely sloppy. And the two goals we conceded the entire game were just pure. I mean, there was nothing that Blackburn did that was actually really deserving of either goal. They just kind of took their chances when we didn't, and it was just a really, really sloppy goal. And it's one of those ones that it's almost unforgivable because, I mean, Bodrov and Hutchinson, and they allowed this guy to just kind of bulldoze his way through and get an open shot on net. And, it's just one of those really sad moments that when that kind of goal is scored, you can kind of almost foresee the way the match is going to go. And it really, I just dropped my head because it's that kind of defending. You have one job, and your job is to not allow simple things like that to happen. And if it was a well-worked goal with fluid passing and incisive passing, I get it. It happens. But that kind of mistake is childlike. And I was very, very disappointed. And, based off of the way we started, we really, really should have been one up rather than the other way around.
And that's what, again, Mike, that's what's frustrating about this. Again, early on, I didn't feel that they were threatening Fulham at all. Again, this is just listening because we haven't watched the replay, but it just felt that it was only a matter of time before Fulham were going to be the first team to score, not Blackburn. This came out of not out of the blue, a little bit, and, a little bit out of the blue. And, you got to give credit to Blackburn for making it happen. But it's a goal that never should have happened. That's the issue that I have. Sloppy goals, both goals, sloppy goals to give up. So Fulham are now down 1-0. And, again, to Fulham's credit, they were still digging to get that equalizer. And, David, that's going to lead me to talk to you about Colley Woodrow, because in the 18th minute, honestly, he should have scored here. There's no easy way to put this. He needs to score here. Talk about his opportunity in the 18th minute, David.
Well, basically, he was put through clear by a good pass. I don't know, was it McCormack again? I can't remember, but
Scott Parker.
Pretty central, actually. He was pretty central. It wasn't like he was coming in from an angle. He didn't really have anyone closing him down immediately. His priority was to hit the target, okay? And then, secondly, obviously, you want to try and force the goalkeeper to save or get the ball in the corner, but you've got to hit the target. But unfortunately, he failed. If he didn't get it anywhere near the target, he sliced it, he's mishit it. But, he wasn't under extreme pressure. He was put through clear. As I say, it was pretty dead central, about the edge of the box, really, for a quality striker. And, I mean, everyone can miss a goal, but that would be meat and drink to a quality striker. They would just be stroking it into the corner, or at least, at the very least, you'd be working the goalkeeper. So it's just, as I said before, it's just not good enough. Too many wasted opportunities.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, David. And you know what? That was a golden opportunity to get level very early on in this match. I keep going back to this. This was a winnable match. Blackburn were not far better, the better side here. This is there for the taking. That's what's frustrating about some of these matches. I can remember Middlesbrough. Like matches like that. It's like what's going on? Why are we losing matches like this? At least we should be drawing. And that's also part of a problem with Fulham. Sometimes a draw is a good result. This would have been a good result. A draw would have been a very good result here. And that's what's definitely frustrating. And Colley Woodrow, I like Colley Woodrow, but he needs to score there. There's no easy way to put that. All right, Mike, I'm going to go over to you. Again, they actually had a very good opportunity to score, hit the post in the 25th minute by Craig Conway. So they were still digging, but Fulham then, near the end of the half, had another opportunity to score in the 42nd minute by LVC. It actually was a great chance to equalize here. Talk about this opportunity from him.
Well, first of all, I'm going to go back to the goal you mentioned, the shot that hit the post. That's the kind of goal that it's such a well-struck shot that if we go behind by a shot like that, I have no problem with.
Okay.
But again, as we've said before, the fact that the sloppy goals are conceded is really, really frustrating. And then you've got Colley, as we just spoke about, missing a blinder. He can't even hit the target. But LVC somehow gets this cross in, beats his man, has a looping header that comes so very, very close to getting on target. And it's one of those chances that when LVC missed it, I had no problems. Do I think he should have hit the post? Yeah, but that's from me thinking as a spectator and not being involved. But I mean, LVC just showed so much more of what we've been missing with him being injured, because that chance that he created with that header was fantastic. And it's just one of those chances that when I saw it and I saw the miss, I wasn't too displeased about it because it was from a tough position. But, I mean, I can't even go back to the fact that our two strikers can't hit the target from open chances, and yet OVC can make something happen almost out of nothing right there. So overall, I mean, I think it was a good chance, and I mean, it was unfortunate that it wasn't on target, but you couldn't really expect too much from LVC from that position.
No, listen, I agree with you on that. And again, it just shows how the kid is just digging and creating opportunities in tougher situations. So I give him credit for that. All right, guys, let's go over to the second half. And, David, I'll go right back to you. This was the goal that really hurt. In the 61st minute, Jordan Rhodes. And Jordan Rhodes is a very good striker, scores to double Blackburn's lead. Talk about this, and do you see it like I did as another sloppy goal?
Yeah, it was a bit too easy, wasn't it? You know, there's several components to this part of the goal. Obviously, they've got into position to a left wing. They've been allowed to get a cross in. And Jordan Rose has got there in front of Hutchinson and got his head to it. And I don't think it's a bullet header, but he's got a reasonable contact with him. And, you know, Bettinelli, I'm probably being harsh on Bettinelli. I don't know if what you think, but it looked like he could have saved it. He seemed to squirm under him a little bit.
Yeah.
And we can't, you know, we can't expect Bettinelli to save absolutely everything that's thrown at him. He's made some very, very good saves of late, and I'm sure he's won us more points than he's lost us. But, you know, perhaps he could have done a bit better there. But obviously, you don't blame him for that. You blame, you know, maybe Hutchinson for not getting there first, or for Richards or whoever for letting the cross into the box. But it was just a bit too simple, and it was a very standard kind of typical old centre forwards goal, really. And that's the sort of goal that, to be honest with you, we need to see more at Fulham. We don't see enough simple goals like that.
You know, I agree with you, David. We don't. That's a very good point by you. We don't see goals like that. That's a very good point.
Because we don't get much width. We don't get many crosses in. You know, and this is why people are clamouring. You know, and I don't say it's a move we need necessarily, but people are clamouring for Matt Smith. You know,
exactly.
To come back. You know, we're talking about we've got two strikers who are not scoring enough goals or converting chances. Then we've got a guy out on loan, okay, at a lower level, who's been putting the ball in the net. You know, perhaps at least we need to test the water, dip our little toe in there and see, well, hold on a minute, let's get him back, let's stick him in there alongside McCormack, see what he can do, because he's never really had a run. I don't know if he is the answer. I'm not a proponent of the long ball game per se. You know, I don't want to see that kind of football, really. But sometimes you do need to be a bit more direct as well, and you get an early ball in the box, and even if you don't get a header on target, if you can, you know, get a knockdown for someone else, you know, and these two guys play together. So, you know, it opens up kind of a can of worms, really, saying, you know, we've been saying that someone like Jordan Rhodes should be, perhaps, you know, the sort of player we've been going for. And in some ways he has similarities, you know, to Matt Smith. Not exactly the same. Matt Smith's a bit more of a kind of a battering ram, I think. But, you know, both sort of more of a traditional kind of centre-forward type player. And, you know, and they've done it and we haven't. And, you know, as I say, Bettinelli perhaps a bit better. Hutchinson a bit better. But the whole team should be a bit better.
No, listen, I agree with everything that you just said, David. Very good analysis of the entire situation, even going throwing in Matt Smith. And listen, we talked about Matt Smith in the last show with Mike Gregg. Mike Gregg is not a big fan of it because of the style of play that would come along with it, like you said, the long ball. I do agree with that, but I think maybe in certain situations I think he could be valuable. But I don't know if he's someone that you play each and every match, but I think in certain situations, maybe coming off the bench, he could actually be a valuable player. But, you know, again, he's out on loan, and it sounds like he might stay out on loan for a little bit, so we might not get that opportunity. But I get why fans are clamoring for him, because he's scoring goals. You know, even at a low level, he is scoring goals. All right, Mike, I'm going to go to you. Now, 5 minutes later, and I actually felt that this was going to come. I don't know why, but I thought Fulham were definitely going to score at some point. They actually scored a very nice goal, basically a tap-in from Ross McCormack. Talk about this opportunity that was set up by LVC.
Well, first and foremost, you'll see that LVC is kind of the heart now of this team, central midfield. Everything that comes through, anything goal-related, generally stems from LVC doing the right thing. And he placed the ball perfectly for Ross McCormack, who could miss. But I think the key in this goal is – is you can just see the frustration, I think, in Ross McCormack when he scores. He picks up the ball and he runs back, and he's just frustrated where if he was playing as a striker in a more straightforward striking role, he'd be scoring a lot more often. He put himself in positions that Rodallega and Woodrow don't. I mean, he was in the back post, the ball came across, and he slid it in. That's what a goal scorer does, rather than playing Ross in the central attacking role, cam role. So, I mean, this goal, I saw it coming, and it was great, and it gave us some life. And I thought, you know what, maybe we can come back and get a 2-2 draw. But I think the really big thing for me, despite the goal, was that you could just kind of see it, in my opinion, in Ross's face, that he was like, this is why I should be playing striker. This is why I should not be playing cam, because I get myself, he's a goal scorer. He's an out-and-out striker. And it just baffles me that Kit can see this and then still play him in the cam role. I don't understand it. I mean, overall, very nice play, very nice goal. But it just really kind of epitomizes where Ross should be playing rather than where he's been playing.
Very good point. Again, excellent analysis, Mike, on the situation at hand and also on the goal. And what's interesting, again, I haven't seen highlights of this. Again, we'll probably have to wait for the replay. But in the 74th minute, Ross McCormack almost scored the equalizer, but again, he was offside, so obviously the goal did not count. But it's the fact that he is a goal scorer. You know, David makes fun of me all the time that I predict two goals from Ross McCormack. Well, I expect goal scorers to score goals. I think that's where that's coming from, David, to be honest with you. Why each and every show I predict two goals from Ross McCormack. But if he's a striker on a regular basis, he should be scoring one or two a game. Not every game, but you know where I'm getting with that. I mean, he does have the ability. That's his job. You know, do your job. You know, I hate to throw a Bill Belichick line at everyone here, but it's about doing your job. His job is scoring goals. Put him in positions to succeed. Put him up front. That's where he's going to succeed. That's where he's going to score the goals from. So that's why I think we're all frustrated here. And, you know, and unfortunately, Fulham could not get that equalizer that we were hoping for to get the 2-2 draw. David, you should have been right on your prediction. Honestly, I think Fulham should have gotten a point, but they did not. The match ends 2-1. Before we move on, I want to ask you guys, again, we're not rating the players, but I want to ask you about the substitutions, your thoughts on all three of them. David, I'm going to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on all three subs. We got, in the 62nd minute, you've got Kaká coming on for Hugo. In the 75th minute, you've got Musa coming on for Collie Woodrow. In the 84th minute, you have Seiko Fofana coming on for Scott Parker. Share with me your thoughts on Kit's substitutions in this game.
Well, the subs in themselves are fairly logical, I think. He's obviously realised that it hasn't worked quite how he wanted it to do. Bringing on Kaká has then just corrected it back to how we're saying it should have started, because Kaká's then gone into the cam role, I guess, and taking off Hugo has moved McCormack forward with Cawley. And then, obviously, Dembele, wasn't it, was a light for light for Cawley. And then Fofana, of course, is just, I guess, it doesn't change much. It gives Parker a few minutes rest with Tunnicliffe probably dropping into that defensive role again, perhaps just to give you some fresh legs. You know, maybe, to be honest with you, that should have been done a bit sooner too, because, you know, we were chasing the game. We had nothing to lose. The amount of time Fofana had on wasn't very much. Whether it was, you know, he's deliberately resting him ahead of Tuesday, whether he's planning to change it around, I'm not sure, but I mean, the subs themselves are fairly logical. You know, as I say, bringing on Kaká was the key one out of those. But, you know, I think for me, you know, from what I've seen Kaká playing, I can't think of him coming on as a sub and being that great or turning a game around. You know, you talk about some substitutes are quite game-changing ones. I think Kaká tends to have been more influential when he started the game, really. Certainly, you know, the Forest game again springs to mind of late. You know, and at Sunderland, he came on and he played in the same position as Ruiz, and it was just a very weird setup, which is another strange one by Kit. But no, the subs themselves, I have no problem with. I think they were all needed. You know, take off both strikers. Neither of them were really firing. Get McCormack back up front. Give Dembele a go. Bring on some fresh legs with Fofana for a few minutes, but should have been longer.
Interesting take there on the substitutions. Mike, what are your thoughts on the three subs?
I agree with Kaka Nikolic. I think that he's the kind of player that needs a little bit of time. He needs some time to kind of find his feet, to find his niche within the group. So as an impact sub, I don't know. Granted, it's who was on our substitute bench, so I understand it. Dembele, another one I understand. He's lively, he's kind of raw, but he has some energetic potential in there, where Woodrow was kind of shooting and just blasting him over or missing the target, so I understand Dembele. But my big, big problem, and this is what really kind of sealed the game as a loss for me, was when Fofana comes on. I don't know why you wouldn't play Roberts in that role. Roberts is the one that scares defenders, that people keep hearing about. He's the one with some agility and some vision. He's won us penalties in the last minutes, like against Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, it's just one of those things that Fofana, to me, has been useless. I really don't rate him. I know he may eventually be phenomenal, but I didn't understand, if you're trying to go out and win a game, why you would play a player like Fofana when you have Roberts on the bench who is just chomping at the bit to get out there. And if you give him the chance, he can make an individual run with his kind of talent. And since he's so much smaller, when you get a defender that hits him, he's going to go flying, which is going to look worse than it is, and we'll probably get a free kick or maybe a penalty. I don't know. I'm just throwing out possibilities here, hypothetically. But I understood Kaka Nikolic and Dembele, but Fofana, that basically was a step backwards, and I think that sealed the 2-1 loss. I think Robert should have come on for Parker.
Interesting take there. David, what are your thoughts about Mike's take on not having Fofana coming on, someone like Pat Roberts coming on?
Well, I know Fofana hasn't impressed everyone, but I have seen him play live quite a few times, and I thought he's been, he has been getting better, and at Sunderland I thought he was excellent, and he's the sort of player that he does get the crowd on their feet and scares defenders a bit, in the same way as Pat Roberts does, I guess, when he starts running at them. It's just, I think, for me, and I totally agree with Mike about the premise of bringing Roberts on to run at them, but in that case, you could make the case saying, well, actually, why didn't he bring him on when he brought Kaka on instead of that and put him in the cam position, where that's where he should be at his most dangerous? Because in the position that Fofana came on, you wouldn't want Pat Roberts playing there particularly. You would have to have a shift around, because Pat Roberts would end up playing kind of left central midfield, a bit too deep for him, I think. And then you'd end up with a situation a bit like we had at Sunderland, where if you'd then have Kaka and sort of Roberts kind of both playing in a cam role, and we would be quite lightweight again there for the last few minutes. So I don't think it would have worked in that respect. I can understand, an either-or situation. But again, it's about playing the right people in the right positions. And if you take off Scott Parker, and as we saw this at home previously, Scott Parker went off and Ruiz came on, and the whole midfield was completely unbalanced after that. And that was partly due to the lack of central midfielders on the bench, but also the way that Kit reorganised it. So I think if you take off someone like Parker, you do need to be putting someone on who is a similar type player. And for me, that wouldn't have been Roberts. So I understand with bringing Roberts on, and I want to see Roberts have a go, because he hasn't really had a good go for weeks. We've seen the odd 5-10 minute cameo, but we haven't seen a really good run from him, and I'd like to see him have a go. But not in that position. It would have had to have been in a more advanced position, so it would have to have been instead of one of the other guys.
I completely agree. The only thing I'm wondering is that with 83 minutes gone, like you only have 7 minutes left in regular time, I understand bringing on someone who's a similar position to him, but at this point, we're already losing. That's the only reason I bring that up. Why not throw someone on and just kind of see what happened? Because the worst thing you can do is get scored on again, or you can score an equalizer. I mean, maybe it's a little bit irrational of me to say that, but that's the only reason why I was going forward with that, why we don't just play Roberts and Kaka Nikolic and see what happens, rather than bring a like-for-like player on when we're already losing. So I apologize if what I said was kind of confusing.
That's okay. Not a problem there, Mike. Not a problem at all. All right, guys. So let's move on. Let's talk about the stats. And what I did, just so you know, I actually have halftime stats. We don't always get halftime stats. So I have halftime stats and full-time stats. So let's start with the halftime stats, and then I'll get your thoughts on that, and then we'll look at the full-time stats, see what we can learn from them. All right, let's start here in the section I call Stat Attack. Let's see. The possession, this is just halftime stats. Blackburn had 39% to Fulham having 61%. Total shots, Blackburn had 9, Fulham had 6. Shots on target, they had 2, Fulham had 1. They had 2 corners, Fulham had no corners. Crosses, they had 12, Fulham only had 5. Tackles, they had 9, Fulham had 4. Passing accuracy, this one's interesting. They were at 70%, Fulham were at 81%, and fouls were Blackburn had 6 and Fulham had 5. Okay. David, what are your thoughts on these stats? Let me bring you back on there, David. Sorry. Do you hear that part, David?
Yeah. I've heard most of them. The one I heard, obviously, that upset me the most, you said, I think, was shots on target 1, wasn't it?
Yes.
Well, that's not good enough, is it? One shot on target. So
we
had to scoop.
Right, but David, this is halftime stats.
Oh, sorry. I do beg your pardon. Sorry. I missed the first little bit because I just quickly redialed in again.
That's
so
okay.
I do beg your pardon. So you'd have to run me through those again a bit. Sorry. So what we had
okay,
one
not a problem, David.
Half.
The possession was 39% for Blackburn, 61% for Fulham. Total shots were 9 for Blackburn, 6 for Fulham. Shots on target, they had 2. These are just halftime stats. Fulham had 1. Corners, they had 2. Fulham did not have any. Crosses, they had 12. Fulham had 5. Tackles, they had 9, Fulham had 4. Passing accuracy, Blackburn were only at 70%, Fulham were at 81%, and fouls, they were slightly ahead at 6-5.
Well, this sounds to me like a typical kind of Fulham setup then, where, you know, we are fairly comfortable, we seem to be fairly in control, but we still kind of, we don't turn that control into out-and-out sort of chances and attack, whereas the other team tend to probably catch on the break and a bit more direct. So when they get the ball, obviously they had less possession, but they still managed to turn that less possession into more shots and chances and crosses, of course. The crossing is not a surprise whatsoever because of, you know, we play narrow. We've mentioned two already. We mentioned that already. So that, you know, this is where I think we're falling down in this division. This has been the quandary that we've talked about with Mike as well, about playing the 4-4-2, getting wide men there, getting balls into the box, because it does work, obviously. But we haven't found the balance to be allowed to playing the wide men, but still having, you know, the players in the middle that we want to play. So this is an issue for us. But clearly, you know, we've controlled the play okay. We've had lots of the ball. We've passed it around well. But we haven't had maybe that cutting edge again. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, that's actually sounds pretty much what was going through my mind, at least in the first half. Mike, what stands out to you in the halftime stats?
Let's see here. In the halftime stats, what did you say the shots were for the?
The shots were overall shots were 9 for Blackburn and 6 for Fulham, and only 1 on target.
That was it for me. I just wanted to make sure I heard that right, because I think it just shows how much we're lacking in shots on target from our strikers. With the amount of misses that we're having, we're creating some chances and we're getting shots off. But especially if you see the replay or the highlight packages, these shots that we're taking are in decent positions, and our strikers just are not hitting the target. And I think that, to me, is what stands out the most, because we're obviously doing something right in order to give Woodrow these open shots, and McCormick's kind of blasting a little bit over the top, and you've got Rodriguez, who's been cold for quite some time now. And so we're doing something right to get ourselves in positions, and it's just the fact that our strikers apparently can't, seeming to miss the target altogether, is really, really worrying to me. And I think that's what stood out, because we easily could have been either leading or at least tied at the halftime mark had our strikers been a little bit more clinical up front.
Okay. No. Good stuff. And guys, before we go to the full-time stats, I just got an email just to let everyone know that the replay is now available. Yes, it's now available. So maybe later on you guys can watch the actual replay. It should be up on the Fulham website right now. So just a little heads up there. Okay. All right, let's look at the full-time stats. And, Mike, I'll stick with you first, but I'll just go through them, and then I'll go to you, David. Possession, Fulham had 55% to 45%. Fulham had 12 shots to 19 shots for Blackburn. On target, 3 shots for Fulham, 5 for Blackburn. Corners, only 2 in the match, and they're both to Blackburn. Crosses, 26 to Blackburn. Fulham only had 14. Tackles, Fulham had 9, 18 to Blackburn. Passing accuracy, again in favor of Fulham, 80% to 73%. And fouls were even at 8 apiece. All right, Mike, anything different you see in the full-time stats than you saw in the halftime stats?
The fact that we didn't have any corners is kind of shocking. I don't know necessarily where the issue would be with that, but set pieces are always a danger. And if you've got a team that can successfully or effectively take set pieces, you always have a chance to score. Even if it's not directly from a header, it could bounce around the box, someone could get a toe on it, and it's in the back of the net. So I think the corners deal is kind of an issue. If you're not even getting a single corner. As for the possession, when we are overall have 55%, we're controlling the play well. We're at least controlled. We're able to go to someone else's backyard, take the play, control possession, and have it. We just need to do a little bit more with that possession. And we got eventually those shots and those shots on target, which then goes back to my previous comment about our strikers and our players just not being clinical enough. They're taking the shots, but they're kind of wild, and they're going all over the place. So as long as we can maintain the possession, still develop those chances, and then put shots on target, you're either going to score or you're going to get a corner more than likely out of it. So then you're creating more chances for yourself. So I think the big issue is not so much the possession or our inability with the ball to control possession. It's the fact that shots are still kind of going awry, which then don't lead to other maybe secondary or third chances that could come out of it.
Very, very good take there, Mike. I enjoyed listening to all of that, and you really broke it down nicely. David, what are your thoughts on the full-time stats, and what do you make of what Mike just shared with us?
No, I totally agree with Mike. It's a very good point because, you know, that these chances, they kind of have a knock-on effect, don't they? You know, you have a shot on target. If you don't save, the goalkeeper's got to make a save. If he's got to make a save and he can't hold it, then you've got a chance of it falling back to someone for another chance or for it going off for a corner. And then, yeah, corners is obviously, you know, chance to put pressure on. So it does, it kind of, it's a vicious circle in a way that we're not having enough shots on target. We're not creating further chances from it. So, you know, that is really the nub of the matter. The fact that we just aren't hitting the target enough. And, you know, we saw over the game, we saw Corley, obviously Corley hit the bar from a good position. Maybe he should have scored. He put one wide. McCormack put one over the bar. We had, obviously, LVC went just wide with that header. I'm not sure, apart from that, obviously, we had an offside goal, which we haven't seen yet. But I'm not sure from that if we had many other chances otherwise. Of course, we had the Richards one as well. And Richards one is the epitome of what Mike, I think, was saying there, that he shot and the keeper wasn't able to save it. Unfortunately, the ball squirmed out. It didn't go to one of our guys. But on another day, those sort of things can do. They can fall to someone who's waiting to put the ball in. And if you've got someone clinical in the box there, a Jordan Rose-type character, that's, you know, meat and drink for them, you know. How many goals do these great strikers score like that? I mean, you know, go back to the greats, like someone like Ian Rush, you know, and then before him, Jimmy Greaves. I don't think they ever scored a goal from outside the six-yard box, really. They're all kind of tap-ins and things like that. So, you know, Mike's totally right with that. And, you know, this is what we need to be working on, really, turning possession into clear chances and shots.
Oh, listen, I completely agree with that, David. And the one thing that has frustrated me at times watching Fulham this year, and this is watching, not listening, watching, would be trying to basically make the perfect pass, the perfect opportunity. Instead of trying to create the perfect opportunity for yourself, shoot it on target. You know, take a shot and try to get it on target. You know, stop trying so hard to make the perfect pass, to play the beautiful pass. Why not just try to get in a position to take a shot and then try to get it on target as best as you can? I think, you know, again, like Mike was saying, we're not clinical enough with our opportunities. they are too scattered. They need to be more consistently on target. They're not on target enough. And I think that's been the problem here. The possession's been decent. If you guys follow over the course of the season, the possession has been decent. And that tells me we're not being dominated on the road. This wasn't a situation where Fulham were dominated, that they were on the back foot. This is a situation where Fulham actually had more possession but just didn't do enough with it. And that's the unfortunate result here. They could just not do enough with the possession that they had and the opportunities that they created. And, David, you went through some of them. Yes, maybe they should be creating more. That's part of the rub here. But in the opportunities that they get, they need to be more clinical on it, and they just aren't. And that's part of the problem. It's about scoring goals. It's not about the amount of possession. The ultimate result is scoring goals and winning matches. And that's what they need to be doing more, scoring more goals and not giving up bad goals, the two bad goals they gave up in this match. That, to me, was the difference. All right, guys, I want to backtrack a little bit. I forgot to ask you guys this. David, I'm going to start with you. What was, overall, your key moment of the match as we went through it? Where do you think the match was lost, I guess you could say?
Probably for me, I think giving away a stupid goal early on again, which is, that's been our real signature this season, I think, giving away too many City goals early on. And, I couldn't see clearly, but from Gentleman Jim, it sounded like Stafidis just did a bad throw-in, and it just put everyone else in the doo-doo, let's say. So, once you do that, you're always chasing the game, aren't you? And you have to change, I guess, you have to change any game plan you had because you're always chasing the game. Whereas if it's 0-0, you have a certain amount of control. I'm not saying, you can't win it from 1-0 down because we could have done, but it just gives you like that disadvantage every time. It gives the home side an advantage. They can play a different game as well. So certainly for me, giving away a stupid early goal.
That's a very good take there, David. I like that take. Mike, how about you? Do you agree with David, or is there another moment that sticks out to you?
I do agree with David. However, I've been talking with Giannis a little bit, so I'm going to kind of put a little bit of his words out there as well, paraphrase him.
Okay.
But the reason I do this is because I completely agree with what he's saying. I think the key moment of the match is when Kitt submitted the lineup, because you've got Ross McCormack playing the cam role again, which is still baffling to all of us. You've got Woodrow, McCormack, and you've got Rodallega up front. So, I don't know why he's going with that. You've replaced Grimmer with Jazz, which we've all talked about that. We can understand potentially why he did that. But, and then you've got this team that you're playing our very best striker, who seems to be scoring, which is Ross McCormack, in the cam role. You've got Kaka Nikolic on the bench. You're sending Chris David out on loan. Matt Smith. I mean, it's just the whole thing for this match, the setup to it, is kind of confusing, as we've been saying this entire show. So I'd say the key moment is when Kitt is now seeming to not really learn from some of his mistakes, from some of these players and what they're showing him they can and cannot do. So overall, I think we lost the match right on the off, because the team that we sent out there was very, very much a mixed bag of sorts, whereas we needed to have more consistency and even more changes when it comes to playing three strikers up front and putting our best striker in a cam role. We just don't get it.
Okay. And it's funny, Mike, you actually stole my thunder. I was going to read Giannis's message to me, and you actually just read it. So
never mind.
No problem there, because he actually shared it with me as well. And it's funny because if you think about it, again, I go back to the McGath days. There were many matches where I thought we lost it before the match even began, and this is a similar one. I can't remember too many with Kitt that before the match began, I thought, he didn't get it right, and the match was lost before it began. But I see where you and Giannis are going on this, that maybe the match was lost before it even began, and that's unfortunate. And again, we're being critical. I think we deserve to be critical here. Because when you really look at it, and I keep going back to this, and I look forward to watching the replay, this is a game that they could have gotten all 3 points. Forget about the point. You need to be drawing matches. I get it. But I look forward to watching because I want to see if my thoughts, listening to it, back up what I will watch. Because, again, I just feel that this is an opponent, an average team that we should be beating. these are the games that if they want to get promoted, say, next year, they need to be beating Blackburn on the road. They can't be losing these matches. They need to be winning these matches. This is the difference between a team and ending maybe 10th or 11th and a team in the playoffs or potentially higher up than that. You need to win these road matches. And this is one. This is a perfect example of a match that they need to win in the future. You can't be losing matches like this. That's what's frustrating, because it was there for them. They're good enough to beat Blackburn on the road. Sorry, they are. And I'm a little bit ticked off by it, if you can't already tell. Okay. All right, guys. Before we move on, David and I will be going into detail about Sunderland tomorrow. We also will be doing an end of the transfer window. I wouldn't call it special because normally, typically, for all these windows, I've been doing shows the last 2 hours of the window. I can unfortunately cannot do it tomorrow, so we're not going to do that. But David and I are going to be doing a show tomorrow, a few hours before that. So we will be talking about the end of the transfer window. We still will be talking about it. We'll be previewing the Sunderland FA Cup match, and then we will also have a couple subjects definitely want to talk about in the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. One of them is about the loan situations. We're going to be discussing that. I put it up on the Facebook page, a ton of comments on that. If you want to comment, go to the Cottage Talk Facebook page and leave your comment there. I also asked the question, because, David, you actually brought it to my attention, why not ask a question, who was the worst Fulham manager that you can remember in your time as a supporter? So I put that up on the page. Very interesting takes on that as well. So we'll be doing that. It should be a fun show with you tomorrow, David. I look forward to it.
Yeah, no, I can imagine Felix is one hands down, but let's see anyway.
Well, you know what? Don't be so sure about that. Don't be so sure about that. There are several other names up there, David, that might surprise you. So I look forward to trust me when I tell you, there are a ton of McGaths, but there are other names being mentioned. Larry Sanchez is mentioned a great deal as well. Martin Yole is mentioned. So, again, there are other names and managers going farther back that you obviously would know. So that's why I found it interesting to ask the question. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. I think that's a great subject for us to talk about tomorrow. I look forward to that. That should be fun. All right. But before we finish this show, I do want to get your thoughts on the Sunderland match, Mike. You know, again, David and I will go into more details. But what do you think should be the approach against Sunderland on Tuesday in the FA Cup? And what are your expectations for this match?
To be completely honest, I'm not trying to be a negative Nancy here or anything. I think our best chance to beat Sunderland was when they were down to 10 men away from home. And the fact that we couldn't do that, I have a really, really bad feeling we're going to end up losing something like 2-0 to Sunderland. Because now that they know, and just like us, but now that they know that all the major giants are out of the competition, there's a lot more emphasis to win this match, knowing that they could very well be back at Wembley in the FA Cup. So they may actually play a very, very strong side with a very, very determined team, knowing that they go places. Because obviously the Premier League status is questionable, and they may not be back there, or they may, you know, they're not doing so hot. So the FA Cup is a great competition for Sunderland to show that they're still dominant and to try and go out and win it. Same can be said for us, however. We're probably a mid-table championship side. Better than that, we should relegate second year running. But that being said, there's no better time to go to Wembley for us than with all of these giants out as well. So it's going to be a really, really tough match, and I think it's going to be very physical. And I'd like to say Fulham's going to nick it 1-0, but deep down I have a feeling Sunderland's going to take it 2-0, not trying to be too negative.
Okay. I see where you're going on that. And David, we're going to go into more details tomorrow. What are your thoughts about what Mike just shared?
I'd love to know what Yanis is saying. I keep hearing all these dings. Yanis, you may as well have come on the show. You've been contributing so much today, mate. But, no, I think Mike brings up a good point, and I felt that myself, that did we miss our chance to win it? Because when Sunderland went down to 10 men, Kit blew it by messing around with the team again. And, you know, we should have really finished that game stronger. But we didn't. For a few minutes, it was actually us who were hanging on. And that shouldn't have been the way with 10 men. I know it happens sometimes, but, yeah, did we miss our chance? I mean, you know, who are they going to play tomorrow? Will Adam Johnson be back? score, you know, and he can be dangerous. And of course, you know, Mike said it's right. I mean, the FA Cup has really opened up this year because it is there for the taking for perhaps one of the smaller sides. You know, when you look ahead to Bradford, no disrespect to them because, you know, they must be one of our favourite teams now because they beat, obviously, the other team in Fulham. You know, and a big credit to them. So I think, yep. You know, in some ways I'd just say to them, well, you can win it, you know, give them a bye, let them go through to the next round. They've deserved it, but it's not as simple as that. You know, if we can get through, you'd have to say we've got a great chance to proceed, you know, to the quarterfinals. And Sunderland will be thinking exactly the same, so you're right. Everything to play for. Not going to be easy to go there, but everything to play for. But I don't know how Sunderland will perform. They've got a Premier League to worry about. Thankfully, the results have kind of gone their way this weekend. You know, and they've gone our way as well, Russ, remember. Haaland, QPR back in the bottom three again at the moment.
I know. David, I'm loving it, by the way. I'm glad that you brought that up because I noticed that yesterday afternoon. And that put a smile on my face. Yes. Two teams I can't stand are in the bottom three, yes.
Seeing those two in the bottom three is almost as good for you as finding out that the ball compressor for the Super Bowl has been lost again, yeah? So they've got no air for the ball. But we want to see them down there. So maybe Sunderland can think, well, maybe we don't have to worry quite as much because we're not in the bottom three at this minute. They won their big, big match yesterday, which was their real six-pointer. So, you know, maybe they'll relax. Who knows what they're going to do? Maybe they'll say, no, we don't want to risk it. It's difficult to say, but, you know, with all these matches, it's like the Cambridge and Man United question, isn't it? I bet there was, you know, at 90 minutes, at 0-0, what did Cambridge do? Did they go out and win the match? Or did they make sure they got to a replay to Old Trafford to guarantee them £1 million windfall, you know? And it's the same here for Fulham. In a way, you know, what did we do? And did we throw caution to the wind? Did we want another match? No, I don't think we wanted another match. But
no.
He didn't get it right, really, for me. And we should have taken our chance while it was there, I think. And I agree with Mike that, you know, I don't think it's going to be as easy as that. But saying that, we performed very, very well against them at Sunderland. Why can't we do as well at Craven Cottage? They won't want to travel to London midweek. So... you know, let's talk about it tomorrow anyway when we have a better idea, I guess, hopefully, of what the team are going to be as well. Maybe Kit will give us some clues tomorrow.
We could have some actual transfer news tomorrow, David. I hope we do. You know, and Mike actually mentioned one that, again, I've seen speculation about Chris David going back to the Netherlands on loan. But, again, that hasn't been confirmed yet. But, again, there's a bunch of speculation out there, and we will go through it. I'll be updating before we do the show tomorrow, David, because I definitely, I like talking about the transfer window, and I look forward to doing it tomorrow. But we have a ton to get through tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. It should be a fun show. Hopefully, and I mean this, hopefully I'll be in a good mood. If not, you're going to have to cheer me up, David, because if I'm in a bad mood, that means the Patriots lost. So just keep that in mind.
Oh, yes.
So you should hope the Patriots win.
No, as I say, I'm going to take an interest into it now. All I knew about the Patriots was where occasionally you see them featured on Family Guy. I don't know if Mike's ever seen that, but I'm going to see if I can actually see what all this fuss is about. I know.
Okay.
Don't you apparently play? Don't they play 5 minutes and then have an advert break and then another 5 minutes and then they have about a 3-hour concert in the middle, and you get about 20 minutes of football is spread out over about 6 hours. Is that right?
Oh boy, David. David, one of these days I'll Skype with you. You and I will watch a game together, and I'll walk you through it. I can't do it tonight. I'm going to be too nerved up. Mike can probably attest to this. I'm going to be a person tonight, and then we're going to wrap up this show. Me and my family, we have to watch it together. We cannot watch it with any other people because we are going to be in knots for 3.5 hours. We are going to be a nervous wreck. So. It's, you know, again, this game tonight is not going to be fun for me. It's more like just hope they win. Basically, hope they win. It's going to be about high anxiety as I can deal with. But again, I'm just glad that they're there, and we'll see what happens. All right. Mike, again, before we go, thank you so much for joining us. You'll be joining us again soon. I got the dates. You'll be joining us again. Thank you very much, my friend.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right, you were great. And, David, you're always great. Thank you, my friend. And you and I will be doing the show again tomorrow. We'll be doing a lot of shows. So it should be fun tomorrow, my friend.
Yeah, thanks very much. And, Mike, good to talk to you again and speak to you whenever in the future. And yeah, Russ, speak to you tomorrow, and everyone else listening, I'm afraid you're stuck with me tomorrow, but hopefully we're going to have some good controversy to discuss tomorrow.
Yep. Okay, well, it's time to wrap up the show. It should be a good show tomorrow. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys.
See you later. Bye, Giannis.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Come out of the cupboard, you boy.